Thank you for joining us, Ambassador Brownback.
Sure, happy to do it.
This wonderful afternoon in Washington.
Yes, yes.
We believe you had a very productive visit to Uzbekistan. Your talks with President Mirziyoyev went well, we are told. What was the centerpiece of his message to you and to Washington?
Uzbekistan is changing. They're opening up. They want to see outside investment coming in. They're changing their position on human rights. They want to be one of the leading countries in the region on human rights, and they want to hold themselves to a global standard. It takes time. They're working through their issues, but that they are in the process of opening up and changing. And I believe what you're seeing is that religious freedom is coming to Uzbekistan and Central Asia.
You know, for the longest time, Washington and Tashkent did not share the same view on what is religious freedom. You know this from your years as a senator. To what extent do you think that Washington and Tashkent are in sync now when it comes to religious freedom?
I think we're getting much closer to agreeing with how you move forward to do this. I think the leadership in Uzbekistan is saying clearly we want to do this, but it has to be a process, and we've got to move it forward. And what you see now in Washington is a lot of people here in the leadership saying, we agree, it's a process. You got to move that on forward. You know, it's never perfect, but they've made several pretty substantial moves. They've let a lot of people out of jail. They've registered churches. They're letting people go back to mosque. There's still limitations, substantial limitations, but they've made some pretty major moves forward, and the leadership is saying, we want to continue that. We want to continue to move forward, and we want them to. So we're working closely with them. We had the UN Special Rapporteur on Religious Freedom over, wrote a detailed proposal about how to move it forward. They endorsed it, embraced it, and now we're in that process of moving it on forward.
You also met several officials who are responsible to implement reforms in Uzbekistan. Do you feel like they share the same vision with President Mirziyoyev when, let's say, when he talks to you about religious freedom and what reforms should mean in this sphere?
They do. Now, there'd be others around the government that aren't as excited about this.
And you know that, right?
And we know that. And, you know, they would say, look, this is like any government, there's a tension within it. There's people that want to do things. There's people that don't want to do things. They want to do it this way. They don't want to do it this way. And so there is that's going on internally. But the president of the country sets the pace. And President Mirziyoyev is setting a strong pace. He had a saying that he used a couple of times in our meeting where he said, you know, I believe in measuring 10 times and cutting once.
There's an Uzbek proverb about that.
Is there? Well, the U.S. one is measure twice, cut once. So when he says 10 times, I'm going, well, that's a lot of measuring. But it is also an indication that we're willing to do this. We want to really be careful, and we want the progress to be sustainable. The foreign minister used that term about sustainable progress, which we do too. We want it to be that way as well. So I think there's a good understanding that we know where we want to get to. They know where they want to get to. We want to work with them on the process. They want to work with us on the process. And then long term, really what they want is for things to improve for their country. They want their economy to improve. They want people's livelihoods and freedoms to improve. And that's what we want. So I think there's a good coming together of where we want to get to, and then a process by which you get to that. In the United States, we're going to always be pushing for more. We just so strongly believe in human rights and religious freedom, and we believe that's a God-given right for everybody around the world, in Uzbekistan or wherever they are. So we are going to be a constant pusher on this. But we also hope to be a partner on implementing these changes in a sustainable way to move it forward.
Did President Mirziyoyev ask for any specific help from you or from the State Department?
We talked mostly about the roadmap forward. They have passed a resolution in their legislature to here's the roadmap, and it's basically what the UN Special Rapporteur put forward.
A set of recommendations.
Yes. And they said, okay, we endorse this, but it's resolution. So now you got to implement it into the law and the regulation in the country. And that's what they're moving forward on now. And they've asked for help on how do you move these things on forward. But mostly it's them doing it in a sustainable fashion. They've made substantial changes on several of their other human rights agenda issues. I met with some people that had been let out of jail recently. And so they're making these steps. We want them to be faster, but it's moving.
So religious freedom, human rights in general, have been a friction point in U.S.-Uzbek relations for a long time. And so when you meet religious freedom advocates, for example, in Tashkent, special U.S. ambassador is meeting with these people, the critics of the regime. And there are many people who are still not happy with the changes. They think that the pace is too slow and that president is promising too much, but the government isn't really delivering much. You hear that kind of criticism across the country, and also from the Uzbeks outside of Uzbekistan. There are millions of Uzbeks who live abroad now, migrants, for example. Do you see common ground when you listen to the critics of the regime and when you listen to president and the reform team, in Tashkent, as an outsider, obviously?
I see common ground on where people want to get to. The issue is the pace and the continuous movement, because there's some movement forward, then there's some backsliding. And so when you start getting things moving forward and then you slide back, you're going, wait a minute, are you guys committed to this or not? And I think that's really where everybody really is challenged to agree. They're saying, yes, we want to get to religious freedom. But then people say, well, you're not doing it here. You backslid some there. Yes, you let people out of jail, but then these people are still being harassed. So there's still issues. There's substantial issues going on. I think, to me, as the United States, what we want to do is be a long-term partner in moving this forward and recognizing that these changes don't happen often as quick as we'd like or others do, but we want to have a constant tension, just pulling it forward. And part of that's having a solid relationship so that, while we hope their economy grows, we hope that there's investment that comes in from outside, particularly from the West.
Particularly from the United States.
Particularly from the United States. But, they're in the region with China, and China has a big strategy for investment in that region. Well, we want to see Western investment, because often with Western investment will come Western ideals, too, saying our companies will operate under a series of human rights beliefs. And so they'll do that in the country, whether the government requires it or not. This is what our ethic is, and that's the way we're going to operate. Well, we want to see that. A lot of times the Chinese companies, that's not part of their ethic at all. It's just, this is an economic issue, and it's going to be all about economics. Well, we believe economics is critically important, but it also should be a part of a human rights strategy. And we've been emphasizing this with them. If you want more security, if you want more economic growth, religious freedom is a piece of it. This is how you grow. Is having this diversity of thought and freedom for people to be able to express and do what they see fit. These are important growth-oriented concepts.
Well, Uzbekistan's approach in terms of fighting extremism and radicalism has been based on close monitoring and control over the religious organizations and religiosity in general, whereas Washington for a long time has been urging to use a softer hand, arguing that letting people to practice their religion freely will discourage extremism. So these are two different approaches. There are some similarities, but in general, the approaches have been different.
That's right.
Do you see those two different approaches changing?
Well, I do. And I see the Uzbeks as saying, okay, we see your strategy here, and we're willing to move it your way. Plus, we've got data, too, that will show people, if you want less terrorism, give more religious freedom. And that doesn't mean if somebody is a radical militant and willing to blow up buildings or kill people, you arrest them. You try them. Well, we do that all the time. We're not saying you let a person off scot-free saying, well, my religion says that I should do this. You're out killing people. No, we don't agree with that. But I think the key is here is that they've used this really very broad-based approach. We're going to just control it all. And we say, no, you go after your bad actors. They're bad actors every country in the world. And if they want to blow a building up or they're trying to kill people, you arrest them and you try them under the law. But you don't just say, we're going to shut down all these mosques here because we've seen some bad actors come out of here. It's, no, there are a lot of good, peaceful Muslims, people of other faith that are practicing in this country. Let them practice their faith. And if you do arrest them, if you do shut down the place, you're going to make more of them mad. And they're going to become more radicalizable if you don't let them practice their faith. Let them practice their faith.
Now, what if some Uzbek officials, security officials, will tell you that, you know, our way has worked. We haven't had any terrorist attacks in Uzbekistan for a long time. But in the United States, you have had some, including, you know, some events that involved Uzbek immigrants. As you know, several Uzbek immigrants here have either been accused, arrested, and in some cases sentenced now on charges of terrorism about a year ago, for example, in New York. So did you have conversations about that too? I'm curious about how candid those conversations are between American and Uzbek officials, because these are real stories, real issues, right?
And they are real. And as a governor of Kansas, we had a terrorist there were plots that came forward. And I told them we did. But the key wasn't, we didn't, and they were Muslims that had self-radicalized. But I said, we didn't go and shut down the mosque because you had two guys that self-radicalized. And we even went to the mosque and asked for help in dealing with the issue, and they helped us. So that, you know, the route isn't to shut the whole religion. Most people, the vast majority, are very peaceful practitioners. And this can be a very big asset in releasing spiritual capital in your country, which it does in the United States. The religious groups do all sorts of good things in the United States. But you do have people that will radicalize, and that does happen. But you don't shut the faith down for it. You go after the individual, and you work with the people in the faith that are all of honest and goodwill to help you deal with the people that, the very small group that have radicalized. That's the route to go. And plus, if you're going to grow your economy, if Uzbekistan wants to grow its economy, and it does, it has a young population, and if they don't grow, they're going to leave. A number of people have. And they don't want that. But if you're going to do that, you're going to really have to open up the space for people to be able to think and to act. And that's, the United States has a very growing economy, but you don't limit anybody's thought here. If you're going to be violent, you're going to get limited, but you let people think and be free.
So assuming that the Uzbek government is sincere when it talks about reforms, how long do you think it would take to deliver some tangible results, specifically in this sphere?
Yeah, they're coming now. People have been released. There have been churches registered, not near as many as we had hoped. There have been people let to go back into mosques, but there's still limitations. Things have happened within the last year or so. The problem of it is there has been some backsliding, and it's not fully open. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to take some time. But there have been concrete steps that have taken place. We want more. And to me, it's not just about Uzbekistan. It's all Central Asia. Mm-hmm. The entire region has really been very Soviet-oriented in its mentality. Just, you got to control.
Towards religion.
Yeah, it's just, you got to control it all, and you got to control it all the time, or it'll get out of hand. And you're just going, that you're not going to grow that way. And you're going to have more security problems in the long term that way, because you will build a more radicalized population. So Uzbek opening up is really something that we hope to build for in the whole region, about here's a route to do this. What they don't want to do is just blow it all open and then say, okay, now we got to shut things back down because we had this happen and that happen. And, you know, there's likely to be things that will happen. That's just the nature of human society and free societies. But you need to stay committed to opening up the entire society, and it will be much better for your country in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
much better.
So we hear a lot about incremental progress in Uzbekistan when we talk to U.S. officials. Do you plan to reward that progress, or do you think it's necessary to reward that kind of progress to help the country move forward?
I think it's important to recognize it. You know, we tend to be pretty puritanical on human rights, religious freedom issues, where we're just going, you got to do it all. And that's the right state to be in. And there's reasons for that, because we just so strongly believe in the right, that this is just foundational to you and it's foundational to a country. But when you're working with a country that's not used to that, and they've got systems in place that have gone contrary to that, it does take some transition time for those things to successfully work. So I think really what we should do is we should recognize what's taking place, we should push about things that haven't taken place, and then we should maintain this constant tension to do the next steps to move it on forward. And that we want the progress to be sustainable over a period of time. And we want it to be a model for other countries to be able to do and see that they can move from a controlled society to an open society and have a functioning government and country that supports and works with its people. These are processes that need to be worked just really on a constant basis. And there's probably not a roadmap for every one size fits all. We can do it this country, and then we do it this way in that same country or another country. You got to figure your own terrain out, probably.
You know, they say there will be a lot of setbacks, and we want America's support when we fail too, not just when we're doing, you know, when we're succeeding in our forums and, hey, you know, this is good and here is a reward, but they want your support when they're struggling, when they are facing these challenges. And as you said earlier in this interview, you know, finding that balance between security and freedom is very difficult.
It is when you're used to being a total lockdown country. But that's why we want to work with them on, okay, here, let's keep the steps going. Let's keep mm-hmm. the steps going. Let's keep mm-hmm. the commitment, even if you get setbacks to it, because there are going to be setbacks that mm-hmm. will take place. But then let's stay committed to you, too, to work with this. That's part of relationships. You know, I mean, nobody's perfect. And in a relationship, you say, look, I'm committed to you, let's work this on forward. It's not going to be easy, and it may be difficult in different times along the way. I just think that's why it's important to really build the relationships. And then I hope we also can talk with a number of younger Uzbek officials to bring them along and talk to them about just the mentality of freedom and what this looks like and the commitment to freedom. That and hopefully ingrain this. I saw this in Georgia when they first really moved out of the Soviet sphere and a more controlled atmosphere to an open one. The leader at that time, Edward Shevardnadze, brought in a bunch of younger men and women to run the government. They were 20, 30 years younger than him. But they were just more open to, yeah, that's the right way to do it, and they were committed to it. And I think in a lot of these countries, they really need to have that younger group really come in earlier rather than later to take over much of the operation, because their mentality would be more open to and staying with a freedom approach.
There are many young people in the new Uzbek government, and more are joining. They're still very cautious. You know, they're still very nervous about what kind of steps to take next, and you know, they're still trying to figure out what reforms really mean in general. Wow. And you know, it's good that we've made our minds to reform ourselves, but how to is the big question, you know, for many Uzbeks. And when we talk to them, you know what they see? They see that, you know, America used sticks a lot toward us. We hope that they use more carrots now. That's what you hear, because, you know, many of them, even the younger ones, grew up seeing how America imposed various kind of restrictions, you know, put Uzbekistan on various kinds of blacklists, you know, whether it's about forced labor or child labor, religious freedom, for example. You know, Uzbekistan has been a country of particular concern for a while, even though it's been waived. But that label itself has hurt the egos of many Uzbeks. So what kind of a period is this now? Is the U.S. going to use more carrots and fewer sticks and hope maybe that'll produce a positive result? Where do we stand as far as you're concerned?
I think so, particularly since the Uzbeks have indicated sincerely that they're doing this and have taken sincere steps. And the thing that I've talked to them is I think they need to come here regularly and tell the press. So they've held press conferences, the National Press Club. I think they ought to go to New York. And I told them, you keep making these moves, I'll go with you and say, you know, look, they are changing on this. Going into the capital markets and saying, we think this type of entity or another type should invest in Uzbekistan. And I said, you keep making these moves, I'll go with you to tell them, look, they're making sincere progress in this area, and this would be a good place for you to invest. I don't know if that'll get them resources, but I do know a number of Western companies, they're going to look at how the country is rated on forced labor, religious freedom, press freedoms. That's going to be part of their analysis on whether or not they invest in the nation. And Uzbekistan's making the right moves to get themselves in a position where, you know, companies would say, no, that's a place we could invest. The other thing that really looking forward is they're centrally located in Central Asia, so they could easily be a transportation distribution hub within the region as it opens up. They've got a lot of nice agricultural resources and development possibilities and natural resources that are in there. And then they've got a young population. Which a lot of places around the world, companies are looking for where can the people come from that'll work. So I think the potential is really there. Now you open this country up, and I think they can get at the front of the list instead of at the back of the list making the transformations. And there, I think, is where you'll see your real carrots coming in.
Well, my last question is more personal. I interviewed you before when you were Senator Brownback, when you were dealing with Uzbekistan, with Central Asia, specifically with Islam Karimov's regime, and those were different times.
Yeah,
that was
were.
A different period, and you're in a different role. And this is a very different role now. You are a diplomat, and I'm sure you're looking at the region at Uzbekistan from a different vantage point. Has your view about the country changed significantly?
You know, honestly, no. I always thought that the place had just really great potential. I did. And I was there 20 years ago, and it was a far different place. Tashkent was then than it is now. And I lay my head down the hotel room at night this trip and just thinking, what a gift to be invested in a place 20 years ago. I'd proposed a Silk Road Strategy Act then to link the country on an east-west basis and hoping to really reignite the economic and the mental sphere of this is a region that can work together, and it has to work together for it to really have the economic viability and lift that it needs to have, and it needs to be open. And not controlled by Russia or fall into a radical Islamic sphere. And I hope not pulled all the way into China either. I was hoping to be more related this way, and I think it still exists. I think that potential is still, just now is really the time for it to happen. It needs to move now. We got the bill passed, the Silk Road Strategy Act. It was an idea that came to me while I was in Jerusalem. I told the president that, because he's, I think, probably puzzled, why is a middle of the United States senator interested in Uzbekistan? But I think it's still there. Now it needs to happen. Then it was a dream. Then it was a vision. Now it really needs to have legs under it so that the average person in Uzbekistan or Kyrgyzstan or Tajikistan, any of the region, can start to see I've got opportunity. I've got a life here. I can invest and grow here. And Uzbekistan needs to be really one of the key gateways for that to happen in the region.
Did you ever meet Islam Karimov, the previous Uzbek leader?
I've
you met him,
with
right?
him in the past. And, you know, he had a different vision and a different mentality for how to deal with things. And so I really think the new leadership has got a,
So you see President Mirziyoyev as a different leader?
I do. I do. And he worked in the prior government a lot. And some of the.
He was the prime minister, of course, yeah.
Was a gentleman that I knew here as ambassador. I think they've got a good vision moving forward. And I think we would be wise to work with them.
Give them a chance.
Yeah, and give them a hand, you know, in it. Instead of, you know, us just telling them this is bad, that's bad. It's just, okay, you've changed that, and we got a ways to go here. But let's start working together. Let's start doing together.
How interested is Washington in what's happening in Uzbekistan? Like, you went, you came back. How interested are people in learning what you learned in Tashkent?
They're interested. Because Central Asia is
the other parts of the U.S. government.
Yeah, no, people are interested because Central Asia is just, it's this place that can go one of a couple of different ways. It could go back into the Russian sphere. It could be in the China sphere. It could be radicalized Islamic difficulties. I mean, you've got multiple difficulties in this region. And the best route for them is to be really an open, free society that governs themselves. So that's why people here are interested in it, because they know the potential exists for multiple bad outcomes, and the potential exists for a good outcome too.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Brownback. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Mine.
Thank you.